This week on Art on the Air, we feature author and poet Hache Obejas, whose award-winning novel, Days of Awe and Poetry Chapbook, This Is What Happened in Our Other Life. Next, playwright and producer of Mindy's Bachelorette Party, Carrie LeBach and Marilyn Cantanella. Our spotlight is on Chakaka in the Dunes Photo Exhibit B, running August through October with Becky Jaskowiak.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, and WDSO 88.3 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight. And we've heard her on here before with other things representing theater, but this time she's representing a whole new photography exhibit. It's Exhibit B of 2023, and it's from the Chautauqua in Dunes. It's going to be running August 31st. Becky Jaskowiak, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Becky. For having me.
Tell us a little bit about what the program there at the Dunes is about, what it does and everything.
Sure. So Chautauqua in the Dunes, we have just celebrated our fifth anniversary. And so in 2018, we brought the Chautauqua Institution experience that you would have if you went to the Chautauqua Institute in New York. It's a place right on the lake where you would experience art and history and performance and debates and lectures and all kinds of things that just bring hands-on experiential learning together. It brings people from all walks of life, ages, experiences, and we wanted to replicate that here in the Dunes. You know, it's obviously a picturesque, beautiful location with a ton of history, and just the perfect place to do this. There are about 30 of these Chautauqua Trail locations across the country, and a couple in Canada, actually, that were inspired from the Chautauquas of the early 1900s, 1890 to 1910 or so. And these were traveling experiences. You know, some people might relate it to the traveling circus, but it was a traveling educational opportunity and how many people would learn about the topics of the day and politics and economics and environmental things at that time.
I see that on the Facebook page locally, they also do some other educational things. So it looks like they were doing things with young people, like making bird things. So tell us maybe about some of that part of it.
Sure. So throughout the year, we have a variety of different hands-on workshops and experiences. Most recently, we did a papercraft birds crafting workshop because we also have the pollination investigation exhibit from the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service going on at the State Park. And we've done writing workshops and poetry. We've done film screenings. We've done a variety of all kinds of things. We bring acoustic music out to the dunes and a variety of areas and places. And our theater experiences helps that I know a bunch of theater people to bring theater to the dunes as well.
So tell us about the exhibit, how it came about, a little bit of the details, where photographers came from, what levels of photography, and everything like that.
Yeah, Exhibit B has kind of a double entendre. It is our second actual art exhibit. So Exhibit B fit that, but then we also chose to have it be, the photographers had to submit photos that were titled, that started with a B. So lots of bees and birds and bugs and beaches. All the things. Yeah, exactly. All the things that the Indiana Dunes region is known for. It had to be within 50 miles of the Indiana Dunes State Park. And we had submissions from Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, all the way, you know, several hours away. And we ended up selecting the top 25 photos. And in order to be selected, you had to score pretty high. We had three judges review them. You had to get a 65 out of 75 in order to even make the show. So that's a pretty high bar to even make it into the show. We ended up with 16 different photographers, seven of which are novice and nine of which are more advanced, meaning they have at least 3 years of experience or have taken some classes, that kind of thing.
Did you have any bees or was it mostly birds?
There were a lot of birds, and there was a bee that landed on flower at the appropriate time. Yep.
Took good direction.
It did.
And who were some of your judges real quick?
Sure. So we had Michelle Pendergrass is our art director at Chautauqua in the Dunes. Jared Riddle is a professor of English at Ivy Tech, and he is our humanities director at Chautauqua. And then Marie Laudeman is the interpretive naturalist at the Indiana Dunes State Park. And since we are hosted in their awesome facility, we encouraged her to be a judge, and she was very excited to do it, as she also does photography, which I didn't even know.
Wow. It's a fantastic exhibit. Quickly, summarize when and where it's going to be, and maybe in our last minute here.
Chautauqua in the Dunes Exhibit B will be August 31st through October 29th at the Indiana Dunes State Park Nature Center. That's the one if you take Indiana 49 North straight into the park. The Nature Center is open 9 to 4 daily. There is a gate fee to enter the park, but there is not a fee to see the exhibit or anything like that. And you will also be allowed to vote for your People's Choice Award. So go drop your ballot in the box as to which is your favorite while you're there, or visit us online at facebook.com/Chautauqua in the Dunes. And you can vote there as well.
Well, we thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's Becky Jakowiak. The Exhibit B, 2023 Photography, August 31st. And you can see it there right at Indiana Dunes State Park. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
And a spotlight extra, the Indiana Ballet Theater's 16th annual fundraiser, a 50s dinner dance in support of the Classical Arts Center, is Saturday, September 9th at the Family Life Center. For more information, go to ibtnw.org. That's ibtnw.org. Or call 219-755-4444. That's 219-755-4444. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station. And Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Atiy Obejas to Art on the Air. Atiy is a poet, novelist, journalist, translator, and teacher. She was born in Havana, Cuba, and after a perilous journey to the U.S. by boat, her family was settled in Michigan City, Indiana, and she moved to Chicago in the 1980s. She's a prolific writer and has garnered numerous awards for her creative work, some of those being Boomerang, Boomerang, Tower of Antilles, Runes, Days of Awe. This is what happened in our other life. We came all the way from Cuba so you could dress like this are just a few. Her writing is focused on personal and national identity themes. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely.
Well, Atiy, we appreciate you coming on. And like we always like to start out with our guests is kind of their origin story. And we hit that a little bit, but maybe you can tell us a little bit. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Atiy.
Oh, my. Well, I started writing when I was a kid. I discovered very early on that I didn't have an accent when I wrote. When I first came to the United States, I had a pretty thick accent. I only knew how to count to 12. So everything was a new experience for me. And, you know, me, my brother, my cousins, we all went through a period of getting, you know, made fun of and, you know, tricked into, you know, saying profanities without realizing. They were like, kids were always asking us to say sheet, which we couldn't say. So we would, of course, say the wrong thing and, you know, get in trouble. So I discovered pretty early on that writing was this accent-free space where, you know, words just lived on their own, and your voice and your manner of speaking had nothing to do with how it was received. And so I started doing that. And I think my first publication came when I was in sixth grade. So it was it was pretty early.
So was writing a family sort of thing or storytelling? Like, where did...
Storytelling, yes, definitely. My dad was a great raconteur, and he was always the hero of his stories, which later on we realized was total BS. but
that's why it's called a story, right?
yeah. But writing, not so much. They were both my parents were great appreciators of literature, but not they didn't write, and that I know of, no one else in the family really had that kind of inclination. I have an uncle who married one of his seven wives or something like that, who did write a book, but that was more like she accidentally bumped into us in a collision course and then kept going. You know, I don't think we ever even met.
So what do you think started? So you said you wrote from a very young age.
Right.
What was the initial spark for that, do you think? And was it a story or was it poetry?
No, it was poetry. It was I was going to school in Indiana and they were putting together an anthology of, you know, poetry from kids of every age. And I wrote something up for it. But I think it was the same thing that gets a lot of people to write. You know, you're a little lonely, you're a little, you know, off center, and you're trying to make sense of things. And writing is a process of discovery. So it's a real, you know, it's a real place of refuge in a lot of ways, because you figure stuff out, you know, when you have to write it out.
Do you remember that poem or what the theme of it was?
Oh, gosh, no. That poem is a great blur in my mind. I'm sure I have a copy of it somewhere. I'm sure that that little booklet that the state of Indiana published is, you know, among the things that I brought home from my mom's house after she died, but I have no clue where that could be right now. My kids will find it after I'm dead and go, what the heck? What is this?
So you are writing at an early age. Tell us, continue your story a little bit. You're in Michigan City, and so you're, I assume, public school or whatever. So continue with that.
I was in public school because both my parents were public school teachers. My mom in particular was a very big believer in public schools as a kind of an equalizer, a great foundation of democracy. So the notion of us going to private school was probably, you know, completely anathema to her. But I kept writing. I noticed I got, you know, I mean, it's like everything. When you're good at something and people respond to you and give you positive feedback, you stay on it because positive feedback feels really good.
Yeah.
And You know, so I went on, I, you know, became editor of the high school newspaper, went on to college. I went to Indiana University in Bloomington and, you know, got involved in the journalism program there and met a terrific professor in the English department, a tweety little guy named Mel Platinsky, who ran writing workshops. I mean, seriously, he wore bow ties and he only called us by our last names, Miss Obejas, Mr. Schottky. You know, and it was a very formal space. I'm a very informal person, but we sort of fell in love with each other. And he was a great boost, a great supporter. And I started working for the local alternative press as well in Bloomington. I don't know, it just kind of kept going. The whole time I was writing poetry, I really wasn't writing any fiction. When I began to write for the Chicago Sun-Times, a lot of the news stories that I was bumping into, I just kind of wanted to finish them. I wanted to know the end of the story. I wanted to know more than I could put down on the page. And so I started writing fiction that way. I started sort of expanding a lot. You know, I would be inspired by something I'd go out in the world and see and then come back and write a little more. And I just kept doing that. I wasn't really killing myself to publish a whole lot. I did have poems published, you know, but other than journalism and poetry, I wasn't doing much of anything. And then finally, I decided to go to grad school, and I got an MFA in fiction, and I had a manuscript, and I thought, you know, I really ought to do something with this. Now, many years before, I had met the writer Sarah Schulman, and Sarah had said to me, if you ever get it together, which I think is already like a real sign of where I was at.
Yes.
If you ever get it together, you know, and put a manuscript together, I will read it and I will give you some feedback. And so I called her and I said, hey, Sarah, I've got this manuscript. Can you give me an address? And she said, listen, I'm going to a conference, a writer's conference in Boston. Why don't you come? And we will talk then. And I said, sure. So I drove to Boston completely broke and unprepared for this, literally sleeping in my car, and spent the entire conference trying to find Sarah Schulman. We seemed to not come. You know, this was way before cell phones and, you know, all the quick and easy ways of getting together, you know, to communicate. So you really had to like find somebody by a landline in order to actually communicate. I kept thinking we would coincide at some panel or some reading or something.
A convergence would happen.
Yeah, but it never happened. But on the other hand, I kept running into this other guy, Doug. I can't remember his last name right now. He's a writer too. And we kept chatting and having a really nice, you know, interaction. And then finally, on the very last day, very, very last day, and I'm carrying these manuscripts around, right? I'm carrying a manuscript for Sarah. Oh, and I had this big crush on Michael Dennehy from St. Martin's Press. Not a boy-girl crush, but like a professional crush. I thought he was like the greatest editor that ever lived. And so I was also on the lookout for Michael Dennehy, and I was going to shove my manuscript in his face. Never saw Michael Dennehy. We're at the last panel. It's an agent's panel. It's, you know, Doug had insisted I go to this thing. And so we're sitting there and, you know, the whole thing goes through, everything's fine. And at the end of the panel, one of the women on the panel comes up to Doug and gives him a big hug. And he takes one of the manuscripts from my hands and hands it to this woman and says, Charlotte, this is the writer that I've been telling you about. Well, the woman was Charlotte Sheedy, who is one of the great literary agents of, I think, the 21st century. She's really a very spectacular human being. She's represented Mark Kurlansky and, you know, look at the Lemony Snicket guy and, you know, Sapphire. I mean, all kinds of, you know, Marilyn French. Anyway, she took it and was very nice and kind. And I was like, Doug, that was from Michael Dennehy. And this other person was right behind Charlotte and was like, oh, what's that? And got very interested. And Doug takes the other manuscript from my hands and hands it to this person. She happened to be one of the editors with Cleas Press. Anyway, I went back to Chicago and was home and, you know, sort of sorry that I had never run into Sarah and was printing up a new manuscript for Sarah. And Cleas called and offered me a contract. And I, you know, without thinking twice, said yes. Literally 15 minutes later, Charlotte calls and says, hey, I want to represent you. And like a complete moron, I say, oh, no, thanks. I already got a contract. We're good. And she's like, oh, you're an idiot. Let me look at it at least. And, you know, I won't charge you. Let me just look at it. So I did. I let her look at it. The numbers changed dramatically after she looked at it. You know, they went from like 1 to 9, whatever. I mean, I knew nothing. And so, you know, she became my agent and was always in a sort of a state of horror with me because, you know, according to her, if I had an option of something for $10,000 or I had an option for $300, she was pretty sure I was going to go for the one for $300. So, you know, she's delightful and I'm very grateful to her because she got me some very big contracts later on, which really sort of brought me into adulthood. You know, well beyond everyone else's age of adulthood. I think I had adulthood like at 42, you know.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for it.
yeah. And so she was great. And I was with her for like almost 30 years as an agent. And she did great stuff. I mean, she didn't like that I really liked small presses. She was kind of a big money person. And she didn't like that I do a lot of translations because she thought I should have been focusing on my writing. But I really love translations. So eventually we had to part. Still friends, still talking, still hanging out. And now I'm in California. I just finished another book. Just went to Beacon Press. It'll come out next year. It's called The Boy Kingdom. It's about my sons. I'm teaching a little class at the University of San Francisco, landscape, migration, and climate change in literature. It's really, wow. I've never taught this class, so I'm making it up as I go along.
You know, magic happens that way.
Yes. Yeah, totally. The students are pretty great. I really love them. Anyway, I'm just out here writing and teaching that one little class and hanging out with my kids and enjoying the fact that it's never really cold here.
Well, we've been having great weather here back in Northwest Indiana, so it's we've dodged the hot bullet. So, one thing, and I know we're going to ask you to read something in a little bit, but what advice do you have? That was such a unique journey you just took us on with your own story. But like a young person that wants to get into writing, tell them what advice you might have. And maybe your approach was different, but you know, I'm sure now that you're very experienced in this, tell them what you'd tell them.
Well, I think the main thing I would tell people who want to write is to read. Read across the board. Read stuff that you don't think you know, you're interested in. You know, if you've never liked sci-fi, go read some sci-fi just to push yourself. You know, read poetry. My God, read poetry. I read poetry every single day. Yeah. Just because it greases the wheels. But, you know, if you don't know what's out there, writing is pretty hard to do as a career. You have to really stay connected and be engaged with words, be engaged with ideas, with stories, you know, have experiences. I mean, I feel very much that the universe really takes care of things. You know, I've been very lucky, and a lot of things have seemed to be very much serendipity. But when I hear other writers tell stories, it often feels that way too. You know, oh, and then it just happened to me, you know. I mean, obviously, you know, you have to put yourself in the place to meet people. You know, you should probably go to a conference or two a year. But I don't really believe in like going to every reading and going to, you know, everything. Because, I mean, that's a lot of time that you should be reading and writing. You know, I think also it's important to have a core group of people who read your stuff and give you honest feedback. You know, writing is so solitary. You're by yourself. You're staring at a screen. You know,
isn't it hard to discern those people, though, because your friends will be your friends and are not necessarily going to give you critical feedback?
Absolutely. You have to find the friends that will give you critical feedback. Or maybe not the friends. Maybe do an exchange with somebody. I mean, I do an exchange with somebody whose work I don't particularly care for, but he happens to be phenomenally good at critiquing mine. So I get so much out of it that I feel like, you know, I have to respond. And that's fine. I mean, I do give him good feedback, I think, but, you know, he is just so good for me that, you know, that's important. It takes time to find those people. It's a very rare thing, actually, to find it. Right now, one of my best readers is actually a former student of mine. I just finished a thesis class with a couple of new people, and I asked one of the young men to read what I'm writing now, the novel that I'm working on, because I really felt like his analysis and his critique during the course of the summer was so good. And he seemed to really focus on the kinds of things that interest me and also the kinds of things that I'm a little bit weak on, so that, you know, and he's pretty fearless. So I feel pretty strongly that he's going to, you know, have no shame about saying, well, this sucks, Hotch.
I know I have a friend who'll say, I really don't like that word that you used.
Yeah.
You know, it just really.
Yeah, you need people like that.
I love it. I don't always agree, but.
No, of course not. And the thing is, you know, when it comes to criticism, you take what you want, you know,
advice.
Yeah. You know, people can rip you to shreds, but I mean, people who are cruel or mean are not helping you. You know, you need to find those people who can say hard things to you in a kind way and things that you can respond to, but you never accept 100% of the criticism, and it takes a long time to find people. And sometimes, you know, you have to change up. I realized I had a reader who had been reading my work since like 1984, and you know, she knew my stuff so well that it was no longer worthwhile to me, because you know, she could see when I was experimenting and forgave it. And it was like, no, if the experiment works, great, but if experiment doesn't work, I need to know that. And I realized, okay, I gotta switch up. I gotta get some new blood in my staple here. So that, you know, that was good for me. That was good. I also, you know, belong to a community of people who are always, you know, like two of my best friends are Cristina Garcia and Carolina de Robertis. So, you know, we are constantly in a kind of a circle of feedback and discussion. And I mean, you know, we go out and drink and gossip and talk about our partners, but we also talk about the books we're working on, and we exchange manuscripts and we do that kind of thing. And that comes with time. I mean, that didn't happen right away. That came, you know, over time. The thing about writing, it's everything is about time. Mm-hmm. Every single thing is about time. Everything takes time. Even after you sell a book, I mean, just sold this book to Beacon. We won't see that book for another year. By the time I go out on the road to, you know, to promote it, I won't even remember what the hell it is. I'll be on to like another project or perhaps two other projects, you know. Sure. So it's hard that way.
And so what actually sparks that? Because life is squishy. Memories are squishy. Like in Memory Mambo, I really enjoyed that, just for that reason too. So what is the spark for you? Like for me, it can be the sound of water or being near water or the wind blowing, and that sets me on not a poem or a story about those things, but it enlivens me in a way that the writing just sort of flows out. Do you have sort of a touchstone like that?
You know, it's very different things. Sometimes a poem will spark another poem. Sometimes, you know, it'll be my kids. Sometimes it's just an experience I'm having. Sometimes, you know, it's being in love. Sometimes it's, you know, a great drive. One of the things that I love about living in California is that no matter where I drive, the view is always absolutely spectacular. There's always rolling hills. There's always water, especially where I live. And, you know, you feel like so damn lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, we would love to have a reading. So what are you going
to do? Sure. Yeah, I'm just going to read quickly from a piece in Boomerang, and it's called The President of Coca-Cola, and I'll read the English version as opposed to the Latvian version. The President of Coca-Cola. Ana Mendieta is the president of Coca-Cola and dresses in yellow, a mother of millions, an international pop star rolling by the riverside covered in spit and feathers. Ana Mendieta is the U.S. Senator from Florida, the governor of New Hampshire, 4 feet, 10 inches seared into wood, traced with blood, formed from mud and grass and gunpowder. She leans on the bar counter, a mentirita in her hand. Ana Mendieta is the Grand Duchess of Luxembourg, a prestigious professor of international law at the Geneva School of Diplomacy and International Relations. Ana Mendieta is a shadow play of light in the cornfields of Iowa, a mound of earth outside Havana, cave drawings. She's the mayor of Wichita, the tender-hearted sibling of the late dictator, a glamorous fashion model, welfare recipient, emergency case in the emergency room, a soldier, dentist, and historian, the host of a daily talk show on Telemundo who gulps down a milky black cow every day before taking calls. Ana Mendieta is the intellectual author of Miami's Resurgence, the evil genius behind the bombing of a plane that killed every member of the national fencing team and the man who ripped out his lover's guts when she moaned the name of another. Ana Mendieta is a power hitter, MVP, and six-time All-Star, celebrating at a gay B&B on Duval Street with a chocolate slam and a tray of cocaine. Ana Mendieta is the president of Coca-Cola and a double agent. I'm going to stop there. The poem goes on for a little bit longer, but I know that we're running out of
your
time.
Your language just dances.
It does.
So much.
Thank you. Thank you for this interview. This has been great.
Well, we want to give you a chance to tell us how people can find you online, where they can find your work, and maybe even reach out and get in touch with you. Maybe you can help some writer out there.
Yeah, I have a website at achiobejas.com. That's A-C-H-Y-O-B-E-J-A-S. That usually has pretty much everything that's happening right now, including readings and, you know, newspaper articles or whatever I'm doing. So thank you for the opportunity to put that up. Appreciate it.
Well, and we will have a link on our website. When you click on your picture, which will apply to me shortly, it will take you right to that website. Ache Obejas, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air, sharing your wonderful life journey. It was just so enriching, and sharing some of your work.
Yeah, it's been a complete pleasure.
Gracias.
This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. We would like to welcome Carrie LeBach and Marilyn Catanella to Art on the Air. Carrie and Marilyn met in 2022 after being cast together in a play. Due to that convergence, Bold Lips Entertainment was born. Bold Lips Entertainment is a production company out of Northwest Indiana. They provide unique alternatives to make theater more accessible to the masses. The show in production now is Mindy's Bachelorette Party, an interactive play, which is a modern take on dinner theater. Carrie has a BA in English education and a minor in psychology and trained at Second City for acting and improv, and has a TV review podcast called Wolfram and Cast. Marilyn is a social justice advocate and U.S. Army vet, and for 3 years has worked for herself as an operations consultant to small and nonprofit business. Thank you both for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Marilyn and Carrie.
Hello, thank you for having us.
So glad to have you on board. Well, Carrie, we're going to start with you. I always like to hear about your origin story beyond your little biography there. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Carrie.
Well, I always had aspirations to be a writer and a performer from the time I was a kid. I wrote my first play in middle school, which I had very lovely teachers who let us waste entire class periods using my fellow classmates to perform and be audience members, and it was a lot of fun. I studied English in college, as Esther mentioned in the intro, So obviously stories and storytelling has always been a huge passion of mine. And as far as a playwright, Mindy's Hot Shot Party is actually the first play that's, you know, been published, produced, et cetera, that I've written. And the inspiration for that came in 2015. I had gone to a dinner theater, and my friend Kate and I were observing that all of the female characters were, you know, in service to the male characters in some fashion. They were the wife of, the girlfriend of, the mother of character with more prominent arc. And I thought, oh, you know what would be great is if women could have meatier storylines in these dinner theater experiences. And so then I wrote Mindy's to make that happen. And I chose a bachelorette party theme because it's obviously something that, you know, is ripe with a lot of interesting female characters. And I loved the idea of having all different people from all walks of life have a reason to come together for one common goal, even though they would have nothing in common otherwise.
Excellent. Well, appreciate that. And we're going to get together how you got together. But now, Marilyn, let's hear your story, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. So, I mean, basically, grew up on the south side of Chicago. That is my background. Lived there for over 35 years. I am very similar to Carrie. As a kid, was doing a lot of improv, was doing a lot of acting. In fourth grade, my hallway pictures that said my lifelong career goal, I drew myself in front of a mic because I was going to be a comedian. I have since acquired responsibilities that dictate that the lovely life of comedianhood is not for me. So I, leaving the Army, basically went into corporate America where I am an operations specialist. I currently work for a nonprofit focused on urban agriculture. So that goes ties back to social justice advocacy for me as a Southside native. That's really critical. And to me, the arts are no different. My degree is in small business and entrepreneurship, and I often see organizations operating in the nonprofit sector in many ways for multiple years, the way a small business operates in the very beginning of its life. So the first 1 to 5 years for a small business can mimic 20 years of nonprofit life. And in the arts especially, I think that's exacerbated. So I feel really compelled between my personal passions and my professional capabilities to find synergy in how I move forward.
So tell us how you guys got together. You kind of touched on that, but tell us about that and then the whole formation of Bold Lips Entertainment.
Well, we, like we said, we were cast, we were both in Beatniks on Conkeys, Done to Death. She played Jane, I played Mildred, and we ended up just forming a really fast friendship. We would go out for trivia nights. We, you know, literally this week went and played bags for a couple of hours. We just really enjoyed each other's company. We always have tons to talk about, our mutual interest in theater and pop culture and writing and just pondering all of life's big questions till, you know, the cows come home. So basically that's kind of how we became friends. And, you know, through one of our many conversations, I had mentioned that I had written and produced Mindy's Bachelorette Party many years ago, back in 2016. And with her, you know, background in business management, and she's like, have you ever thought about bringing it back? And we had many conversations back and forth at Sip Coffee House and other places where we just decided that we were going to move forward and try and bring Mindy's back, but also make Bold Lips, because we are not just Mindy's Bachelorette Party. We, you know, have plans to do a myriad of other projects in a similar vein, all in the performing arts world. But basically, we both have a passion for women-focused and underrepresented voices. And so we want to, you know, create a platform and then use that platform to lift up other people in Northwest Indiana.
Just a quick comment. Done to Death by Fred Carmichael is one of my very favorite comic mystery plays. So that's a stitch. So fantastic.
Oh, agreed. That cast was wonderful. So many great performers in it. And we had so much fun with that script. And yes, yeah, so you have good taste, because that is one that I had read before auditioning. I actually hadn't auditioned for anything in many years before Done to Death. And I believe Rip Johnson had posted something on Facebook about the auditions, and I read the script and I was like, oh, this I have to audition for. So I came out of my little hiatus and came out for that. And I'm so glad I did.
Serendipity. So Carrie, have you continued to write? Are you still writing? Are you writing another play?
I am currently about halfway through the next play that we want to produce, which is called Office Christmas Party, which is in a similar vein as Mindy's, except a different setting and a brand new set of characters, but a similar setup. And then I have other shows that are more ideas than actual writing, but there's a full-length play I want to write, where it's a murder mystery set at a 10-year high school reunion, and different ones like that. I have other projects in the works, but none that are fleshed out enough to really elaborate on.
So are you, this one is going to be in a restaurant, in an actual restaurant. So are you, is the next one that you're writing is sort of in the same vein? Are you going to be in the same place? Are you married to that one, or are you going to choose a different setting?
So we, for the first two shows, Mindy's Bat Shop Party and Office Christmas Party, our plan is to use local restaurants to be the setting. And they're written in a way where the setting is a restaurant. So any restaurant could potentially be the setting. As far as the venues we've used this time, we're very excited to work with the venues that we have, White Rhino, Bullpen, and Malt Brothers. That said, we are certainly open to exploring other restaurant options, but they are written with an immersive nature. And part of that is people eating and drinking like they would if they were actually at an office Christmas party or actually at a bachelorette party.
Oh, I think it's so fun.
The difference is that because it's interactive versus putting it on a production on a stage. So tell us how that process works with the audience. Obviously they're eating, drinking and things like that, but what's the interactive nature?
The restaurant staff.
You're right.
So I can definitely speak to a lot of experience. I was the original version Maid of Honor. So I did this firsthand, and basically I would walk up to guests as all the guests will be wearing name tags of their name or whatever name they want to choose for that particular day. And, I would walk up to them and I would say something like, oh my God, Esther, it's been so long since I've seen you. How have you been? I don't think I've seen you since Mindy's Halloween party. Were you the one that was making out with that guy in the bathroom, or were you the one with that crazy costume? And then they could choose how they want to respond. And we train the actors to kind of gauge out, because some people really want to riff with them. I know, as somebody who loves theater, loves improv, if I went to a show and there was a character actor interacting with me, I would want to play off of that. Other people smile politely, and you get, okay, they want to observe more. We'll back off so that we don't intimidate them. And so it's a lot of gauging how much an audience member wants to interact, but all of the characters are going to be interacting in character. So if the character is nerdy, she's telling nerdy anecdotes. If the character is a diva, which was the Liza character that I had played was a bit of a diva, she is very braggy about herself, etc. But incorporating the audience into it so that they get to feel like they are a part of the show. And then the other interactive nature is we have short form improv games that are baked into the script, which call for audience interaction. So some of them are more simple, where audience write suggestions of the title of a song that's never been written, and the actors pull the song titles out of a hat and make up a song on the spot. The other games are where an audience member can actually come up in front and we interview one of the audience members about their day, and then the actors then perform their day. There's a pop culture game where two audience members get to come up and The actors give them clues about celebrities and they have to guess what celebrity it is. So there's many different ways to interact and there's many different opportunities for audience members to interact with the cast, both during intermission, during the pre-show, and during the show itself.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM. So, Marilyn, let's talk about your role in this. You're now serving as a producer in Bold Lips Entertainment. Tell me some of the things that you are doing. So, what's your job as a producer?
Well, in the beginning, my job was to source venues. So, a couple of the locations, well, one of the locations we're at was one of the art locations I had targeted. We are being, full disclosure, like we're being as strategic as we can about this. I just really believe in planning for the eventualities. And so we've been really selective. The places we pick for Mindy's, what's great about them is that they're already established ambiance lends itself to the theme of this party. And so we've been really strategic about that. I've also been responsible for organizing ticket sales. That's another thing, you know. The interesting thing about the way Carrie and I are working together and what's kind of nice about our arrangement is like we can just try a lot of things that have sort of been either traditional in nature for community theater goers, like booking. A lot of places don't have a way to buy tickets online. So we're trying to just like update the way these things are accessed, where you find them. So really, aside from the tactical, like setting up our ticket sales, sourcing locations, coordinating marketing materials. It's also just like a lot of visioning. Like, what does this look like when it's delivered? What is the customer experience from the moment they arrive and check in to the moment they leave? Planning all of those aspects. I spend a lot of time running to Staples to pick up prints and other erroneous supplies. And unfortunately, as it turns out, we had a cast member drop. So I've actually also absorbed a role in the play. So I've been filling those shoes as well. So yes, come see Mindy's. Come see.
Actually, that sounds like
come
a good
see a
balance.
Producer acting like an actor.
No, I think it's a great balance. So in the venue, in doing the venue, is it on the restaurant's night off? Or are you filling the restaurant for that night? So what's that balance like?
So kind of both. I mean, truth is our attitude towards this is meant to be collaborative on all fronts. The truth, for me, what I see inherent in our success is mutual success across multiple organizations. It's not just like the success of Bold Lips gives people who are acting in community theater, people who are doing improv in other venues, an opportunity to sort of converge, network with each other, create opportunities from that lens for people who are, you know, using their free time in these disciplines. But also, like, a lot of businesses have not recovered since COVID, either because they lack staff or people are hesitant to go back out. So there's an opportunity there for us to partner and drum up business for them in the way they're drumming up for us. So we see this as a real opportunity across the board. And I feel like the venues that are working with us have responded to that in a very warm and welcoming way. I feel like everybody has been very collaborative about this process. So on some levels, I think you could say, in all fairness, yes, a Thursday night show is likely a slower night, right? But on the exact same token, White Rhino, for example, has been extremely gracious in what they've offered. All of the venues are cross promoting. So in for what it is, it's a fair handshake. I'll say that. But that's our goal. We're actually, even in our 2024 strategic plan, we're trying to figure out how we can also amplify the work that is being done at the local community theaters that everyone is familiar with, your Beatniks, your Fourth Streets, your Footlights, all of them. We see their success as our success as well. All of us are reaching into the same pool of talented volunteers that can exacerbate anybody's opportunities. So all of these things we're approaching from a very like, this is what we're bringing to the table. Would anybody else like to come eat with us and see what kind of potluck we can create out of the resources that we share amongst ourselves.
Yeah, I think the collaboration is just delightful. And, you know, the more that we help each other, the more everybody is uplifted in the community. Yeah.
Is there a chance eventually, maybe wishfully on this, of moving this out of the community theater level into like a semi-pro type thing where your performers might get paid something, maybe just a stipend? And, you know, this, you know, actually, and the second part of that question is adapting it to stage. I mean, I realize the venues you have picked are that way, but maybe, like, I know, like in Tomfoolery, they're kind of making inroads into the Hoosier Theater in Whiting and looking for things. Give me some of your thoughts about that.
Happy to. Larry, you're reading into my heart. One of the first things that Carrie and I said when we started this whole thing is, how do we pay the actors? How do we pay them, even if it's nominal? Because, I mean, you know this, but we all know, like, if you're in community theater, you're likely giving up somewhere between 10 to 20 hours a week until a show is materialized. Then there's a bunch of other stuff that goes into that, and you're doing that all of your own volition, on your own dime. You're sourcing your own costume in many instances. I'm not saying that's a blanket statement, but in many instances, you may even be covering some costs for your participation. So we are paying our actors $25 per show. Big money. I mean, but our goal really is focused on treating people not only with respect for their time, but also like, thank you for your talents. Thank you for lending that to all of us. Thank you for sharing that with all of us. Thank you for offering your Monday through Thursday night to be at rehearsal. I know in our show, I'll say this, it's kind of a lift. We've got really talented actors. We've got really talented improvisers. The hybrid between the two, everybody had to put in work for what wasn't their strength. And I'm actually really happy that Carrie and I have committed to paying people. We think that something like this, we think that, I'll say, I think, and I think Carrie agrees with me, we think changing certain dynamics, like how tickets are sold, how venues are sourced, how overhead is managed, can allow for some opportunity to create payment for actors. Also, having said that, I'll say Carrie and I fantasize about having our own venue. To answer your venue question, we walk around these areas and we're like, look at that empty building. Look at that empty building. Yeah. So I think our
endless goal, possibilities.
Yes. I think our goal is to create ultimately a space for collaboration and art exchange, where if you're an improviser, you can use the space. If you're an actor, you can use the space. We can host shows there. One of the biggest hardships we had was finding a rehearsal space because we didn't have routine space and because all our venues are bars and restaurants. So I'll let Carrie add. I'm sorry if that was a lot.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of course open to the opportunity of this getting larger and growing and, you know, performing to large banquet halls and large venues and things of that nature. I'm open to adapting. I mean, even this show as it is, this iteration is being adapted based on, you know, the talents of the cast. For example, we have a character named Margot, who was originally portrayed by a woman who was a professional hula hooper. And so she does a performance art piece where she hula hoops. And believe it or not, not all actor improvisers are professional hula hoopers, but they have other talents. And so the woman playing Margot this time around, can paint, she can perform poetry. And so she does a very different version of a performance art piece within the show that is improvised. It's not scripted. It's, you know, based on an audience suggestions. And, I'm very happy to like adapt things to situations, even, you know, the script itself, you know, there were dated references where somebody mentioned Walking Dead because in 2016, when it was aired, that was the biggest show on television. That is not the case anymore. And so, having carte blanche, I am able to adapt things little and, you know, on the larger scale, hopefully someday, to accommodate whatever situation the venue, actor, talent, whatever holds.
Well, we only have about a minute left. We want to give you the opportunity to let our audience know about some of your upcoming show dates and maybe even your projection beyond. I know you're doing quite a bit in September at different venues. So quickly, tell us about that.
Yes. So Saturday, September 9th, we will be at Bullpen Luxury Bar and Grill. Doors open at 2 p.m. The show starts at 3. On Thursday, September 14th, we will be at White Rhino. Doors open at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7. And on September 30th, we will be at Malt Brothers Brewing. The doors open at 6 p.m. and the show starts at 7. You can find more information on Bold Lips Entertainment and Medusa's Bachelorette Party at boldlipsentertainment.com. And if you have any questions, you can email us at boldlipsentertainment@gmail.com. We are Bold Lips Entertainment on Facebook, Instagram, all the socials. So follow us, like us, subscribe, and buy some tickets. We'd love to see you at Mindy's Bachelorette Party.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and telling us about that. You also have a link on our website from your photo that's on there, taking you there. Thank you. That's Carrie Labach and Marilyn Cantanella, and they are the major force behind this show. Thank you for coming on Art on the Air.
Congratulations on your collaboration. I love it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.